Case number 21-4011, United States of America versus Dejon McAllister. Arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. LaRue, you may proceed for the appellant.
May it please the court. My name is Edward LaRue, and I represent Dejon McAllister. At this time, I'd ask that we be allowed to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor. If the trial court's ruling is allowed to stand in this case, Your Honors, the right to privacy, indeed the right to be left alone, free from government interference, will be threatened in any setting where police have a hunch or a lead that someone in the vicinity may be committing a crime. Mass seizures of
Mr. LaRue, we've read your hyperbole in your briefs, and it's interesting, but let's just get the facts of this case, okay?
Please.
You got a Terry stop followed by a Terry frisk.
I would have.
If the Terry stop is valid, are you contesting the Terry frisk on any other grounds, or are you simply saying he couldn't frisk him because he shouldn't have stopped him to start with?
I'm saying he shouldn't have frisked him because he couldn't have stopped him to begin with.
Okay, so if we only look at the stop, I mean, I realize you're saying that the free world is going to end if we affirm this, but we have this interesting aspect of being able to look at the body cameras.
Yes.
And the body cameras, from my perspective, watching them, show there's a group of people. Your client is in the midst of them, whether he was walking through or whether he really had been standing there smoking dope and talking to him. We don't know that. But there seems to be sufficient evidence to show that somebody thought marijuana was being smoked in the park. The police come from all different directions, and your guy is in the middle of the group that they approach. So why doesn't that satisfy the Terry stop requirements?
Well, Your Honor, I think the court and with all due respect, you're making some suppositions that aren't fair on the facts. Respectfully, first of all, the officers are there clearly for an intentional investigatory stop. That's what the captain of the law enforcement team, Zachary McGaw, says he's there for prior to them actually arriving at the scene. They also then assemble a group of 14 to 26 law enforcement officers to surround the entire park and seize all of these gentlemen. The idea that they're in a group is also, with all due respect, entirely unfair given what the video shows, which is groupings, as Detective McGaw admits. There's groupings of two and three people. There's individuals on park benches. So the idea that these people are all somehow engaging in something collectively.
Well, it may not have all been in the same group. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just suggesting Sure. You look at the tape, you see what seems to be a group of, I didn't count them, I'm guessing it's probably six or eight people, and your guy's right in the middle. Is that wrong?
Well, there's at least 15 or so people that are seized, at least if you believe Detective McGaw, who's on the
just
scene.
Just asking you, yeah. Is your guy in the middle of
he's
six or eight
of,
other guys?
One of the people that's in the middle of the scene that's depicted in the videotape, Judge.
Is there a way to distinguish your client from the others in that when the officers showed up, they told everyone to stop, and many people did, but your client and a couple others did not, and they had to be told to stop again? In other words, they took more further movement to leave the group than many others?
Well, I think they're all in the same position of being ordered in the very same way.
Initially.
To be seized.
Initially. Some stopped, some didn't.
And, of course, one has the right to go ahead and walk away if one chooses under Terry.
Well, the officer tells you to stop?
Yes, you certainly have the right to, unless or until there's.
So maybe the right to do reasons. It, but would that raise the suspicion level for the officers? Isn't it fair to think
it that could? It could, but certainly what we're talking about is a matter of a few seconds before my client puts his hands over his head and is seen completely submitting to authority. Therefore, he is in fact seized under the law, at least as.
I don't doubt that. I was just. Distinguishing, I don't doubt that. I was just distinguishing your client from many of the others.
My concern, Your Honors, truthfully is, well, one can say that this is a concern that we have, that the sky is falling. With all due respect, the idea that you can seize a group of people that are either collectively in a group, all of them, individual groups, but a large group, and non-particularize anymore the suspicion that's required under Terry just changes the law entirely. And that is what we're reaching with our brief, and I believe that's what this trial court made.
Well, you clearly can't just decide we're going to go stop everybody in a park for no reason whatsoever. Nobody's suggesting that. I'm just trying to figure out why, in terms of all of the various facts, the anonymous tip, the drive-by, the second check, the police saying, correctly or incorrectly, they smelled marijuana as they approached this group, collectively.
Now let me pick it apart.
It just seems like there's enough.
Sure, I understand. And on its face, perhaps it does. With all due respect, though, again, the anonymous tip, for example, is in fact something that McGaw, the head of the operation, says there were people who were smoking what appeared to be marijuana hours and hours before they ultimately commit to this operation and raid. So the idea that that's something that's contemporaneous to the actual going into the park is obviously...
This would be my suggestion. Mm-hmm. You can break each of these things down into their component parts.
Sure.
And I would agree with you that individually they're not enough. But the question is, collectively, okay, is it enough? Even though there are innocent explanations, perhaps, at every step when you individualize it. That's not what the law tells us to do. We look at it collectively.
Well, collectively, at what point do we just completely expand the spectrum with which we're looking at them collectively? With all due, again, it's you're talking about hours before an anonymous tip with no reliability behind it, which is undercut by the undercover officer driving by right before the raid, who says we see males, but we do not see whether they're smoking marijuana or not. So, in fact, that kind of denies the reliability of this anonymous tip, of whom we have no source, obviously, to know whether it's reliable.
Can I ask you about a lot of your argument turns on the fact that this was a group. Do you have a bright line rule for us as to when, how many is too many?
Well, there's some case law from, actually, the United States cites to the case of Roberts in their brief, where they indicate that where there's four or five males around a car and there's an intense smell of marijuana that the officer is very close to, at that point, that's within the realm of reasonableness to come up and talk to those young men.
But if we get to 10,
the circumstances,
gets to double digits, it's too.
But that same case, Your Honor, actually indicates if it's much more, we'd have to reconsider whether that's too much. In this case, we have a park of a half an acre or so. We have people spread about it, as you see on the video. Whether they were in somewhat slightly different relation to each other at the time that the officers first arrived or not, there's some question, but they're clearly not just all huddled around in a group as they were in Roberts. So that's the best that the government has to offer when it comes to whether a group can
What's
be.
What's the best you have?
And respectfully,
do you have a case that says 10 to 15 is too many?
The best I have is this case, Terry v. Ohio, which says that it has to be individualized and particularized. This is about
just on the number. Hard case.
Yeah.
But on the numbers, you don't have a case that says 10 is too many.
No, there's
presumptively
there's
too many.
There's no case that I'm aware of, and we've looked to find something that delineates exactly how many people, and you can kind of understand why that would make some sense. It depends on all the circumstances, of course. But the idea that this is a group because they're defined by they're being young, black, and African American, they actually send out the females as you see the video. They send the females out as the video begins. So in fact, they kind of cleared out some of the folks that could have been stopped and discussed what they were doing and what they were up to, but they were not talked to at that time. So these gentlemen were separated out.
If they stopped all of them, then the number would have been 30 or 40.
It could have been.
You'd be coming in saying it was 30 or 40 people, so it was way too many.
Right.
So the fact the officers only went to 10 to 15, that's still a problem?
Oh, very much so. Absolutely. I mean, again, unless we're overruling Terry v. Ohio.
Well, I just didn't understand the import of the first point. The import of the fact they let other people go initially and only went after a smaller group.
My point is that they seem to have a belief that there's a group of people that they need to keep an eye on for whatever reasons, but they don't have any specifics as to who those people are. My client is not amongst anyone that they're looking for. He's not a suspect in a crime. It's nothing of that sort. They literally are rounding up people within this park and believing without any kind of particularized suspicion to any one of them, and based on a smell of marijuana only by one of the two detectives. Interestingly, the detective that arrests my client does not smell marijuana, does not testify to it, and the trial court, in fact, quotes him as saying he did smell marijuana. So unfortunately, the trial court actually did make a clear error in its holdings there. The trial court made another factual finding that was clear error, too, with respect to my client being found in close proximity to people smoking marijuana. In fact, no one was found to have been smoking marijuana and found to actually be in the process of smoking marijuana at the time that these officers arrived, nor is my client apparently have any indication that he had marijuana on him, smelled of marijuana, and the arresting officer never testified to the same.
I think the interesting dilemma here for us in terms of how many is too many is one could say if you see two or three guys furtively looking like they're dealing drugs or smoking marijuana or whatever, that's okay under Terry.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have 10 or 15, which is the number here, then that's not okay because it's a larger number. So what we would, in a sense, be saying is we're inoculating illegal behavior if you do it in a bigger group. And that sounds almost as objectionable to your well-taken objection that we shouldn't just be able to walk in a park and round up everybody in the park.
I think the mistake would be by looking at the numbers, truthfully, Your Honor, and I think that's the reason that the United States Supreme Court has not wanted to come down with a specific number being too much or too little. And the reason I say that is because we're focused on the actions of the people that are under suspicion. Those are the actions that we care about and whether they are individualized at least to that group. The idea that everyone in the park, with the exception of maybe some females that are allowed to walk away, are all in a group is frankly kind of repulsive on some level, just to assume that. They have no actual objective data that these people are all in a group. There's no indication that they've all been coming from a baseball game together or that they're on the same church team to play basketball. I mean, there's no connection between these folks. And unlike your suggestion, Your Honor, where if you have a group of, say, three or four people who are clearly involved individually, in a group such as there was in Terry, for example, there's three men there, and one that's the main focus of Officer McFadden, Detective McFadden in the case, but two others who then come back and forth and continue to case the jewelry store in Cleveland, and then ultimately they all three get together, and only then does he, in fact, come up and approach them and involve himself with the ultimate Terry stop, as it's held. So I think the numbers are those that shouldn't be the determining factor. With that, I'd ask that I be allowed to hold on to my
rebuttal time. Thank you,
counsel.
Your rebuttal. Counsel.
May it please the court. My name is Elizabeth Crook, and I represent the United States. This court should affirm the decision of the trial court to deny the defendant's motion to suppress for three reasons. First and foremost, the Terry stock of the individuals at Talbot Park was permissible under Terry. Secondly, the frisk of the defendant McAllister was also permissible under Terry. And last but not least, there was probable cause to seize the firearm. Before I get into those arguments, Your Honor.
Mr. LaRue basically concedes number two and number three. This all turns on the Terry stop.
Correct.
So if, assuming, unless I misunderstood that, we really don't need to spend any, I don't think we need to spend any time on the frisk.
Okay. I can specifically start my first point, which is the Terry stop was lawful. I would like to set the background for this court. As this court previously went in the discussion with the appellant, there's a totality of the circumstances that this court has to consider when discussing this case, and that is very fact-intensive. As seen below during testimony for the suppression hearing, both Detective McGall and Detective Elam just testified that Talbot Whitney Park is in what is known as a high crime area. They provided statistics in Exhibits 3 and 4 that was introduced that shows that there was 24 calls of shots fired, shootings, 9 firearm discharges, 7 weapon law violations. And
if the facts were the same and there were 100 people in the park, could they have stopped all of them and frisked all of them?
I don't believe so. There's a limited amount of facts you're giving me, Your Honor, about the 100.
Well, what is particular to McAllister?
What's particular to McAllister is if you look at Talbot Whitney Park and you look at the description provided by Detective McGall, this actually is a very small park. He actually describes it as a small rectangular-shaped park that's half a block long with houses around it.
Okay, but that covers everybody who happens to be standing in the small park. So I assume you could get 100 people in there.
In other words, if you're going to commit a crime, what, go to a big park.
Well, the 100 people analysis, there's some facts there that are difficult to unpack, but I can unpack the fact that both detectives testified this was not a huge area. This was a very small area. And even Detective Elam talked about, even within this small area, they were not congregating in the swing area where there's swing sets for the children to play. They were specifically in the bench area of the park. He testifies in his testimony when he's asked to describe, well, what is the group? He says, because the park is so small, if there are that many people in there, then they're obviously a group. There's
so
no one on the...
Are we talking about McAllister's subgroup here? Are we talking about everybody that was in the park when they went in?
We're talking about the people that were in the park when they went in. They began to evade police once they saw law enforcement approach.
Okay, so all of those people could be legitimately stopped and frisked.
Those individuals can be stopped, and then they can be frisked if the officer approaches that individual, like they did here in McAllister, and they have specific and articulable facts that show that individual may be armed and dangerous.
Okay, so I'm sorry. So they could stop any. They could, once they got into the park, they could stop anybody based solely on the anonymous tip and what? I assume the smell of marijuana has to be there, doesn't it?
Yes. So we're not only talking about the anonymous tip. That anonymous tip was corroborated by an unmarked vehicle that drove past the park prior to the meeting that the officers had to discuss how they were going to approach that park. As I was stating earlier, Talbot Whitney is a high crime area.
What about the timing of the tip? It was hours earlier, right? I mean, how does it ever go stale, or what's the limit on that?
Even if we assume that it's stale, the moment the officers went to that park and they smelled marijuana and that group started to evade their presence, that they had the, under Terry, specific and articulable facts, the evasion of the police once they entered the park and the smell of the marijuana to stop and investigate.
Everybody in the park.
This was a limited number of individuals that were in this park, correct? Those individuals that were present.
Some of these are hypotheticals that you're just refusing to answer in some respect. If there were 30 total people in the park, could they have stopped every person?
No. If 30, 40 people, you would have difficulty having the particularized articulable facts for that large amount of people.
25, 20?
We could go on and on. We could go 40, 50, 60, 70.
Yeah.
I think
I was going the other way.
Past precedent of the court is there's not this neat set of nitpicky rules that we can have in order to say, okay, there's too many people here, there's too many people here.
In a case that says 10 to 15 is okay?
In this small amount of park where they've already smelled the marijuana, they identify the individuals who are congregated together near the bench, it's not the fact that
25 people congregated together around the bench with all the same facts, but there are 10 more people in this group. Is that okay for the police to stop all 25?
That would be difficult to say. I think if there's particularized facts, then they could stop and speak with those people. They could have a consensual encounter with those individuals to talk about, hey, you know, there's been reports that there's people smoking marijuana in the park.
Agree with your friend that there's just not a case that's a really good guide here. There's a case that says less is okay, maybe more is too much, but there's not a case that says too many, you know, anything close to this number is too many or is okay.
Correct, and I think that's just because courts have previously found that it's just difficult to have a certain set of rules because you're taking the evidence that's in the record and you're looking at the totality of the circumstances from a law enforcement perspective. Both officers described that this was actually a very small area. This is a limited number of people. They corroborated that call, and they met at Hogan High School prior to going to that area to discuss with the other officers who were responding.
There's not a great case that says 20 is too many, or like gives us a mathematical formula.
Correct.
10 plus 2 times this tip plus 3 times something else, it's got to reach some number or something. It's just, it's tough for us, right? There's not a lot of...
Yes, and that's because of the standard is specific, articulable facts, and you have to look at it a case-by-case basis. Would these specific and articulable facts that a reasonable law enforcement officer who receives those facts would... have that same investigatory stop with that.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you a question about the smell of marijuana, which I'm interested in.
Yes.
Now, we've talked about the case of a car, and the police oftentimes say they smell marijuana smoke in the car when the driver rolls the window down or the window's open. And then there's another case that has a couple people sort of congregating around the of the car. The reason I'm asking you this question is I run on a college campus a couple nights a week. And in the spring, you wouldn't need to buy marijuana. You could just get a contact high running along the path as a practical matter. And you look around and think, where is that coming from? And it could be in the woods to the side. It could be a dorm over to the other side with a window open. You don't have any idea where the smell is coming from. So I'm a little concerned about this idea that simply because you smell marijuana, therefore you can round up a group of people. For all we know, it's the mothers that are smoking at the other end of the park when they're pushing their kids on the swing, you know? Who knows? So what do we do with this fact that marijuana smell is a very distinct odor, and it can blow a long way from where it's really coming from?
Certainly, Your Honor, what we would do, the fact is, I think there is precedent with this court that you can't have just facts standing alone when you're considering whether or not there's a valid terrorist stop. You're looking at the totality of the circumstances. So the scenario that you've given would not necessarily fit into Terry, just running through a park and as an individual, and there's a smell of marijuana. Here we have an anonymous tip that was corroborated. We have historical crime data and facts from officers who combined have almost 30 years of law enforcement experience, that there are groups in this park that is private, a prior history of drug use in this park, prior history of firearms in this park, and that's what began their investigation, coupled with as soon as they get to the park and those individuals in the group see that those law enforcement officers are there, they begin as a group, according to Detective Elam's testimony, evading police. They begin to move away with them from them. So marijuana and the evasion, those along with the historical
nature. Is that right that McAllister sort of moved away a second time? Asked your friend on the other side, they asked everyone to stop. Some stopped.
Oh, correct.
That's okay.
Actually,
a few didn't stop, including McAllister. Is that right?
It's actually in the record. He testifies about how McAllister was moving. He states that he saw the bump in the right side. So if you take a look at the video
I'm not talking about the bump. Just that they asked everyone to stop.
Yes.
Some people stopped. A few people didn't. He kept going. Is that true?
I reference that because Detective Elam's testimony, he says he sees him move. So,
okay,
so you have the video where it shows the Officer Talcott ordering stop, and then you see in the background, you'll see an officer, an African-American officer in the pit. That's Detective Elam. You can see him getting out of the pit, and you can see him immediately give his attention to what is eventually known as Mr. McAllister. And he describes in his testimony that I saw the bump on his right side, and then he started to blade his bod a little bit. And this is on page ID 208. There were no officers that had really approached that group yet, so they were still in the little huddle. So he turned his body towards the huddle so no one would see what's in front of him or see anything on the sides of him. So that was Detective Elam's testimony. So he's still moving. You hear the orders in the video, stop, move. And you have Detective Elam who, after he goes in the pit, he looks up and he sees this behavior from Mr. McAllister.
Does that matter legally? If you move, if you turn your body one way, someone else turns their body a different way, does this really matter?
It matters when it comes to the issue that far as the Terry frisk, because Detective Elam uses that as a basis because he sees what he had described as a bump out.
Yeah, more.
It doesn't matter for the stop because this all happens after the stop. They've been seized. You concede that?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
So we're trying to figure out whether they properly seized them, not what happened afterwards.
Well, the officers can, based upon the facts that were given, the marijuana smell, the large group.
But there's no particularized evidence with regard to McAllister on the seizure, right? His movement, his motions, his whatever, all of that is, he was seized by the time all of that happened, right?
Correct.
So the seizure, this is what Judge McKeague is saying, the seizure is just about him and how many other people were seized? Is it 10 to 15? What number are we looking at?
I think the record reflects.
I mean, I think no matter what we say in this opinion, whatever way we come out, people are going to look at it and say, we've made a rule about how many people can be possibly thrown into a group. I mean, is it 10 to 15? Is that what the reality is of the case, of the people that were huddled around the bench? I mean, you're saying, okay, all of this stuff, the smell of marijuana, the confidential informant or whatever, the anonymous tipster, whatever it is, put all that in the hopper, police go to the park, they smell marijuana, and then they seize X number of people among, you know, McAllister is one of them. What is X here? How many people were seized actually then?
Well, I would like to point out, as far as the finding of the group, that the district court had ample evidence before it to determine
what is the actual number in the record in this case of people that were seized under your theory where all of this stuff justifies a seizure? How many people were there?
I could take a
You're referencing the district court's findings. What did the?
Oh yes, I referenced the fact that the court determined that he was a part of the group. I'm just looking to
right, I thought
the exact number that was reflected in the record. So I don't see the exact number here, Your Honor, but I do see that Detective McGall testified that there were double-digit individuals in the park. He didn't get an exact number, but there was a large group where the vehicles were parked on both sides of the street. I'm looking at page ID 142.
So we have no way, we don't have any way to distinguish between McAllister and a double-digit number of people based on everything that you've articulated here. So any opinion that we write is going to, if we were to affirm, would set out a rule of double, it is possible to have double-digit people seized legitimately under this scenario. Anonymous tip, smell of marijuana, and high crime area?
Well, this court, the ruling would be based upon those facts, correct? Right. But also the determination the district court made that he was part of this group where the marijuana smell was emanating. And as this court already knows, under Ohio law, smoking marijuana is still unlawful, and under federal law, the possession of marijuana was unlawful. I'd like to shortly, briefly.
I mean, the interesting part about this, I think, is I'm just looking back at the district judge's order, and she doesn't say how many are in this group. She describes it, and she doesn't say large group. She just says a couple different times, there's a group of males. So there's a lot in the briefs and other places about it was 10, it was 10 to 15. Is there testimony that says how many were stopped?
The testimony basically describes that it was a group 10 to 15. There wasn't an exact number as to how many people who were stopped that day.
Well, first you say no, and then in your answer you say that this testimony that it was 10 to 15. So which is it? Does the testimony say a group of males, or does it say a group of 10 to 15 males, even though it's not in the district court?
I apologize, Your Honor. It does say a group of males. I see that my time has ended, Your Honor. Based upon the reasons given in our briefs, the United States would request this court affirm the decision of the district court. Thank you.
So, Mr. LaRue, what is the where do we look in the record that corroborates, if possible, how many were in this group to the extent that, under your sky is falling argument, that that makes a difference?
I respectfully would say it doesn't make any difference, and here's why.
Okay, so you don't care how many are in
there? I don't. I think the law has always been the case since Terry v. Ohio that you need specific and articulate.
So even if there were only two or three, and we know from looking at the video there were more than that,
correct.
You would say because of the lack of the articulable suspicion for each of the individuals in the group, you can't do it. Can't stop.
Well, it says individualized to the actual suspect, and that's the key here. The other part of this is that is being sort of overlooked, I'm afraid, is that they're seized first, and then we develop the Terry stop circumstances, totality of the circumstances, and that's sort of backwards as I see it. Respectfully, I don't think it's fair to seize people first, and then as we get closer, because watching the video, we see that they're seized first, and then the officers kind of close distance for their safety, understandably. But nevertheless, they close distance, and at that point, they begin to perceive some people are moving around in odd ways. Some people are turning their bodies in other ways. But at the point that my client is seized, Mr. McAllister is seized, the U.S. Attorney has just, or Assistant U.S. Attorney has just admitted that, in fact, there was no reasonable suspicion placed upon him.
But why can't you have a reasonable suspicion that encompasses a group? Certainly that's what we
You could, in fact, of course. And Terry is just a case like that. Three people, it's only a group of three. You could have it for 100 people if they all seemed like they were completely involved in the same enterprise.
If only one police officer, when approaching a group, however big it is,
mm-hmm.
smells marijuana, mm-hmm. coupled with all the other things that had happened previously and that they knew before they showed up. Bottom line, why isn't that enough?
Well, first of all, because we have an anonymous tip with no reliability that's been completely overridden by the undercover officers who don't, again, verify anything. So we have an unverified anonymous tip that essentially is given no basis under law.
But it's corroborated by the drive-by that says that there's still a group of males and there's still problems with how people are parked. Enough to justify sending police out, it seems to me.
But not enough to do more than work on the parking issues. So at that point, certainly not enough to seize a large group of people or an individual person without reasonable suspicion individualized to that person. I mean, even Detective Elam, who arrests my client, says, in fact, that when he's questioned by myself, but are they in fact frozen? Were they not free to leave, right? Correct. Okay, and they've committed no crime within your presence? Correct. You know, he knows.
Do you ever elicit how many were seized?
In the video that is actually depicted, I believe there's 12 people that are seized that are clearly under suspicion, if you will, by police. And how many of those ultimately are arrested, I don't know, Your Honor.
Does it make a difference that this happened in a high crime area as opposed to the campus that Judge McKee runs on?
Respectfully, I understand that's a term of art that is used an awful lot, but truthfully, living in a high crime area has never been anything more than a consideration when it comes to reasonable suspicion. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people, including a lot of downtown buildings that are in high crime areas and places that we pass through.
So it's a consideration.
There is an A consideration, but not a terribly good one, if only because it's transitory for people. And there's all kinds of reasons you might be there for no reason other than a non-crime related reason. And with that, I guess I've...
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We appreciate your briefing and argument, and the case will be submitted.
Thank you, Your Honors.
And with that,